Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. Boy, it's days like this, I am so grateful. I have not put away my Christmas decorations yet. It is so festive around my house this morning. And of course, being at the crossroads of two seasons, I have on my kitchen counter sunscreen and plum pudding. So it's been kind of a crazy day with the weather. I don't know where in our listening network is there a really nice spring-like day. Because if you are going to get one, call me and let me know. 877-933-2484. I'd love to hear about spring-like weather because it's not very springy around here. And we start share tomorrow, which is going to be exciting. Spring share. So we definitely need some spring weather. So last week I took most of the week off, and I'm looking at my four-page dossier of what I did. And I must say it's heavily redacted. So I just love saying the word redacted. I think that basically says I'm trying to hide something. When they say redacted, I think that's what it means. But I don't know. I saw my accountant on Saturday, and basically it was like one of those Capital One commercials. So what's in your wallet? Well, I'll hand it over because that's what the government seems to do around this time of the year. If you've not gotten your taxes done, you better get going because that clock is a ticking. We have a great show this morning. We've got Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. He'll be with me in just a minute. We've got Chris Martin. We've got David Aikman. We've got lots more. Yeah, lots more to come. You're mouthing, Rebecca. I love that. All right, we'll take a little break. It's 6 minutes after the hour. When we come back, Patrick Albanese will be on the line.
Devil ain't lazy.
No, siree.
Devil ain't lazy.
No, siree.
He roams around with sticks and stones, passing out his moans and groans.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
I'd unravel. Good morning, we're back. Patrick Albanese is my guest, my friend, my colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, and he is on our Skype line this morning. Hello, Patrick.
Good morning. Welcome back. I was hearing that commercial for the love languages and you need to go five. And a lot of people say, ooh, I'm just not, a polyglot. Huh? How's that for you? Polyglot speaks many languages.
It does.
But do not be intimidated because three of the love languages share verb conjugations. So it's really not that overwhelming. You could, you know, it's like learning Spanish. You get some Italian thrown in for free.
I like
it. Welcome back.
I like it. Yeah, so Psalm 103, verse 19 says, the Lord has established his throne in heaven, and his kingdom rules over all. So given the fact the world is in such turmoil, let's just keep that in mind, that the Lord is in control and rules over all.
Yeah, but isn't the world always in turmoil?
It
you know,
is.
It's like the Tommy Lee Jones character in Men in Black. You know, when Will Smith says, you know, it's the end of the world, and he says, it's always the end of the world, kid. It says always some, you know, he has some fancy name of some alien life form coming down, a battle cruiser about to blow up the planet. And you go, yeah, it's kind of always the end of the world. It's always the end of the world.
Yeah. So John Bolton starts today. So his plate is going to be full from the get-go because we're, you know, talking about what's going on in Syria. And I don't know
yeah,
what to
well,
report
Yeah, well, he's
going
to have to cancel lunch. There's so much going on. He's got to cancel it. And it's not because he doesn't have time to eat. He just doesn't have time to clean out the mustache after eating that taco salad. Those Fritos get all over the place.
That's usually what they serve Monday at the White House, too, is the taco salad.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, but it's all you can eat. So I think that's – or all you can keep down is
– Right. But I don't know. What should we be reporting at this point? I mean, a gas attack in Syria, 40 people dead. Yep. Russians say it's fake news. They're saying Israel launched the missile.
First they said we were doing it. First they said, well, we're blowing things up. And then they said, all right, it's Israel blowing it up. So the two boogeymen have been thrown into the mix. And they say, oh, Trump announced the withdrawal, which he said he would never do, and he did. And then look at this. You know, why would Assad gas his own people when, you know, we were just weeks away from the Americans being out of there? It doesn't make any – nothing ever makes any sense. But, you know, maybe Assad doesn't make the decisions. You know, maybe it's Iran who's been propping them up or Russia. And helping prop them up and saying, let's not get the Americans out of there. Let's do something, you know, to make sure that they stay here so that maybe all they really want us to do is blow the place to smithereens so that Iran can kind of move in and take over. You know, we removed Gaddafi in Libya, and what happened? ISIS and a bunch of bad guys filled the void. And maybe that's Iran's strategy, is get the Americans engaged. And when we've had enough, we just say, oh, just hit the button, blow the place up. And then somebody else moves in, takes over, and they have yet another foothold in the Middle East. So it's hard to predict. And I'm certainly not the guy for that. Yeah. You know, I'm as bad as Jean Dixon. remember Jean Dixon? She hit like 1% of her predictions?
How about that?
She once predicted we would all wake up one morning and we would have turned into cockroaches.
Really?
And I'm pretty sure that didn't happen, although when the kitchen light goes on, I do tend to scurry just a little bit. So, you know, I'm not going to predict this. It's a mess. That's why you have like John Bolton around.
Right. So when someone becomes technically a war criminal, and I would assume Bashar Assad has now received that status.
He's crossed the Rubicon. I don't even know what a Rubicon is.
I don't either, but it sounds cool.
Yeah, you said redacted. I say Rubicon.
Okay. So when you get that status of war criminal, what are we what can we do? What does the Geneva Convention say?
Yeah, I am more familiar with the Lake Geneva Convention, which is a very nice resort in Wisconsin. And that was, come on in and have a good time. But the I don't know. I mean, we captured Saddam and he got a nifty little trial, right?
Oh yeah, that worked out good for him.
It did. You know, he ate well his last few months, and then I guess we just took care of that. And I you know, it's hard to say.
Uh-huh.
But you got war criminals, and it seems like when we don't do anything, you know, when Obama, for instance, a few years ago with Syria, you know, put down the red line, said if they cross this with use of chemical weapons, then there's going to be some serious repercussions. And then they crossed the red line. And he said, about those repercussions, you know, I don't think that word means what you think it means.
Right.
And so we did nothing. And, right. you know, we sometimes we go in like, again, we upset the apple cart in Libya without a future plan. This seems to be something we do. We go in, we say, we're not sure exactly what's going to happen after we're there. And then we sometimes create a bigger mess. I don't know how easy this is to do.
Yeah, and I don't know, driving in this morning, I was listening to the news, and all I could think to do was to pray, because I certainly saw some of these images of these very small children looking very sick. And I can tell you, my heart broke into 1,000 pieces, like it always does when I see that. And I think, well, I have to petition the one person who cares more than anyone, and that's God. And the first and most immediate thing I can do is just pray for those families and those people.
I don't know what else you can do. You know, we're just a couple of guys in the Midwest, and you say, I you know, actively, what can I do? I can try to vote for the right people that will do the right things, but I'm not 100% sure what the right thing is. So you're right. You know, at some point we have to look at our faith and say, is God in the driver's seat here? Does he have a bigger plan for all this? Because I'm a little tapped out on options.
Right.
It gets frightening sometimes. And, you know, we do live in this wonderful place, and so these kind of horrendous things that have taken place since the beginning of time, they don't register well with us. I know they don't with me. You know, of course, we have those first world problems, and you know, we sit at home and say the cable guy's late. Believe the indignity, you know, and you know, we don't fully grasp, hey, the world's a pretty messy place. I hope you have faith in something a little bit bigger than mankind, because I don't know if I trust mankind so much.
Right. Yeah. All right, Patrick, let me take a little break. When I come back, we'll continue our conversation. I'm speaking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Be back in a minute.
Would you like to
Good morning. It's 17 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with me this morning. I'm speaking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. And Patrick, as we look at the new week, you know, Mondays are always that day that you get up and you go, all right, five more days before the next weekend. Like, get back to work. Make sure I pick out a good outfit this morning. You know, you always want to start the week in your best outfit. And all of a sudden, then you look at the news and gas prices are up, stock market's down. And we're starting to think, all right, what are you making of all this?
Life.
Let's move on to the next question.
I remember, you know, when George W. Bush was president, you know, anytime anything bad happened, it was blamed on him. And when anything good happened, they'd say, well, you know, the president has really no power over that. And then when Barack Obama was president, if gas prices went down, you'd see the Facebook pages light up going, thanks, Obama, you know. Right. And if gas prices went up, they'd say, look, he has no control over that stuff.
Oh, sure.
So I assume that Trump will be getting the blame, because when the stock market was going through the roof, they said, look, it's got nothing to do with him. Nothing. In fact, we would like to say that that's the result of the Obama economy.
That's right.
Finally, after 8 years. Kicking in. And now with it going down, they'll say, yeah, see, Trump messed up Obama's good thing. So, again, you'll listen to the news and you'll say, well, do I need an emotional reaction to this? I mean, my $100 in the stock market is now worth, well, it's not really worth anything, I guess. What is it? About $82.
Okay.
So I feel poorer today.
Well, plus you got to pay your stockbroker's commission and everything else. So it's probably, you probably owe money.
No, my kids are the stockbrokers.
Okay.
I just let them pay. Yeah.
All right. Now,
what do your kids like today? Nickelodeon?
Yeah.
still Nickelodeon.
I'm guessing, Patrick, some of the Twitter wars that go on and some of the discussions that are happening on social media are not discussions. They're just arguments. And it seems that more social media triggers arguments than discussion. And what we need more in life is discussion, not arguments.
Well, if you really need yet another sign that the four horsemen of the apocalypse are about to mount their steeds, Jimmy Kimmel and Sean Hannity are having a Twitter fight, and people are weighing in, and there's boycott threats, and this guy's, you know, the devil, and that guy's, well, that's the devil's cabana boy, and on and on and on, and you're thinking, this is affecting my day? I'm letting this affect my day. I think that's the thing you have to be so careful of. And I hate to, you know, drag Satan into this, but what the, he's a familiar figure. But you know, people like to play the, you know, when they're doing something, what would Jesus do? I often like to ask, what would Satan want? He wants us at each other's throats, however he can, in whichever way he can. And I think Twitter, we found out all this information from Facebook, right? That Jeff Zuckerberg did not turn out to be that nice of a guy, that he's been stealing your personal information, selling it, targeting you specifically. And I believe yet another shoe will drop that'll turn out that he, in fact, is the Nigerian prince that's been sending out all his emails. Because where else did all that wealth come from?
Exactly.
You know, he didn't make it just from Facebook ads. Oh,
right.
No. He just made it from people saying, I got to get that money freed up. It's $22 million.
Right. All I got to do is send in $5,000. Which,
yeah,
by the way, we've done, and I haven't gotten paid yet. Have you?
No. But they said they needed another $5,000 because of,
pay
it
the
turns
man.
Out, you, well, the currency exchange, the exchange rate. That's what got me. You know, that's my fault for not doing the math.
Okay.
So why are we getting involved in all this stuff? It's crazy.
Yeah, but he's going to be putting away the hoodie for a while and getting into a suit and tie as he goes before Congress. That will be interesting.
It will be, and now social media has decided to say, well, we're going to police things for what we feel is improper or not good content. Diamond and Silk, who are these two women that make these pro-Trump videos. They happen to be African-American. They're very funny. They don't say bad words or anything like that. They've basically been banned by Facebook for content that is harmful to the community. So when they asked for clarification, they got none.
Right.
So whenever it comes to these kind of things, when somebody said, well, we're going to police this, just like when somebody says, well, we're going to, you know, decide what's good speech, what's bad speech, my question is always, who gets to decide? Question one. Question two, can I be on the panel? I'd like to be one of those people that decides what's good and what's bad, because, you know, if we're leaving it up to Jeff Zuckerberg, I don't know if I trust him so much. This is a guy that has really sold everything of yours. He provided a platform. You put all your content there. Sometimes he takes your pictures, your information. He's like, I am a bajillionaire using your information. But don't worry, I'll be a good keeper of the flame. I don't know if I trust the guy.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. When I, as we get closer to tax day, and I was reading an article that the top 20% of wage earners will pay 87% of all federal income taxes in 2018. The top 20% of wage earners will pay 87%. So when I sometimes hear that the rich are getting a break, I go, well, good. Maybe they deserve one.
Yeah, and isn't it like the top 1 or 2% pay something like 70% when you backtrack that a little bit? And so every time, when the answer is always tax the rich, tax the rich, I always say, look, the rich have options you and I don't have. You know, they can move to Costa Rica. They can close up shop. If you make doing business here unpalatable, they'll say, yeah, you know what? I'll just take my millions and I'll sit on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And when that kind of thing happens, so I'm not saying you have to coddle the rich, but at some point in time, how much can you get out of the rich before they just say, you know, I don't have to play the game. I don't have to participate. It's like playing Monopoly with your kids who change the rules as they go along. Pretty soon you just tap out.
Right.
Say, I'm out. You know, you can't keep changing the rules.
Right.
What is this new rule? The one with the least amount of money and no hotels wins. Who made that rule? I've got 32 hotels here on Park Place.
Right.
Just land on it once and the game is over.
Boy, makes me laugh.
Monopoly is the only game you have to play that about an hour before it ends, you already know who's going to win, and yet you have to suffer the humiliation of the next 60 minutes of continually landing on everybody else's places and forking over your money, selling everything you've got. And you're saying, I already know you're going to win. You have all the important stuff. And I have to keep playing because you want to see me suffer.
It's humiliating. It's humiliating.
It's a humiliating game.
Yeah. All right. Not to bring up one more sad piece of news, but it is in the headlines that the London mayor has declared new knife control policies. So that's next.
It's amazing. You know, you see people here all the time saying, hey, you know, the UK, they got gun control and they don't have anywhere near the gun murders we have, except that London surpassed New York as a higher rate of murder, and it's knife attacks.
Right.
So the London mayor's response is ban knives. And you think it's an Onion article where he says there's no need to be walking around carrying a knife. You know, the same thing people say about there's no need for you to have a gun. Now they're saying there's no need for a knife. I'm very concerned about the future of the spork. Very concerned. Talk about a versatile tool.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, I actually get the spork with the serrated edge. So it actually, and I don't think they've made a word that combines the spoon, knife, and fork, but it is an all-in-one utensil.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to work? Do you
think I think it is.
You know, I think the bad guys are still going to have knives. They're just walking around stabbing people. It's amazing.
Not good. Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show. Always look forward to our conversations. Have a great Monday, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, be careful with the plum pudding, by the way.
I will.
All right. Have a good Monday.
26 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back in a minute. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Patrick Albanese, I think, is still on our Skype line. Are you there, Patrick?
I usually hang on for 2 to 3 hours after.
Because you got nothing going.
Well, I don't. You know, the kids have to go to school, but they can make their own lunch.
Well, let's just briefly, for about less than a minute, talk about the big live show coming up a week from tomorrow. That would be April 17th. We're going to do a live broadcast of the Early Morning Late Show, and it's going to
risky, be risky, risky, risky. I tell you,
very risky.
Yes. People can see you.
Trust me, this is not a good idea. However, we have people who have started to sign up, and we're going to get a crowd, and it's going to be fun, and we're going to do it from 7 to 8 o'clock. The show will broadcast in its entirety starting at 6, but the live studio audience will be in here from 7 to 8, and we'll be able to do that live with coffee and donuts. I'm not taking anything off the table for this event.
Oh, perfect.
Yep.
Leave it on the table.
And there is a 50-50 chance you will be here in person as well. Say more about
I'm half certain about the 50-50 chance.
Okay, good.
As I know. That is tax day, and it's probably advantageous for me to be out of town. So, you know, that's on the plus side.
Right.
I have a rehearsal for something that, you know, a lot of people don't know that we try to keep a secret is that I perform for a living. I know. Hard to believe. So I'm a magician and an actor at times. And so I have a performance I have to rehearse for. You know, I was realizing because my kids, they like the entertainment thing, and I'm trying to discourage them from getting into it. And I realize a lot of entertainers try to discourage their kids from getting into the entertainment business, not because it's a bad business, but because somebody in the family, you know, has to pay the bills.
Right. So there is. I'm going to throw this out there that sometimes during our live broadcast from 7 to 8, when we go to commercial break, for the live studio audience, you might do a magic trick or two. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Really going to be fun.
Would that be considered an ethical bribe?
Yes.
It would be.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I'll dust off some magic.
Good. I just wanted to plug the event, which is a week from tomorrow, April 17th, a live
that
studio.
That is fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you want to be part of that event, go to myfaithradio.com and you can sign up to be part of the live broadcast of the Early Morning Late Show. That's going to have lots of fun guests. I'm going to put you down as a definite maybe. All right.
Maybe.
Thanks, Patrick. Have a great day. We'll take a short break for news and be back with more Adam Carrington in about 8 minutes.
America was founded as a nation rooted in higher law, not in man's law. This is Jim Garlow. The opening words of the Declaration of Independence say, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." The Founding Fathers understood that these unalienable rights are part of the higher law established by God. The United States was conceived with a thoroughly Christian foundation. More importantly, without the framework of principles rooted in Christianity, woven together, working together, we cannot survive as a free society. Each time we eliminate God from the basis of even one of these principles, we weaken and ultimately destroy it because the principle is rooted in a belief in God. Stay well-versed on these issues at jimgarlow.com.
Minutes until the top of the hour. Good morning. Hope your Monday is going well. Hope your weekend was good. I have on our studio line Dr. Adam Carrington, professor from Hillsdale College. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. How are you, Bill?
I'm well, thank you. So I don't know where, again, you live. Do you live where? Nashville?
I do not. It is balmy southern Michigan.
Okay. All right. Balmy would be the key, right?
Right. I'm actually the students here do a production of a Shakespeare play every year, and it's entirely student-directed, student-acted, except they'll let a professor in. they're letting me in this year, but it's supposed to be this weekend outdoors in our arboretum.
Okay.
And there's snow on the ground this morning, not much, but enough.
Yeah,
It's a little nervous as to what, is this going to be a production in the snow or not? And how many people will come up, including how many actors?
Yes, of course, Hillsdale's in Michigan. I apologize that. It's Monday morning. It's hard to get started, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have family in Nashville, and they've been teasing me about how much warmer the weather's been.
I think I've heard you talk about that, family in Nashville. So that's what triggered me. So thanks for bailing me out there a little bit.
Happy to trigger you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about Kevin Williamson and his firing. Very interesting.
Yeah, because I thought it was a very also an interesting hire by the Atlantic. The Atlantic seemed to be interested, and they've made some other hires that seem to show some desire to, while they are a left-leaning magazine, have some real back and forth within their pages. And he lasted about 2 weeks. And I think, I'm sure a lot of listeners probably follow the Babylon Bee website, that's sort of Christian satire.
Mm-hmm.
They said that the Atlantic quickly patched up a small hole in its echo chamber. that was well put. Ostensibly, it was about some comments related to abortion that Williamson had made. He is pro-life, but he had said that women who have abortions, that there should be the death penalty for them, and there should be hangings. Hangings would be his preferred method of execution. Now, taken at face value, that's obviously way out of the mainstream of the pro-life movement, much less the United States in general. But I think if you read Williamson, and I was actually at a talk here at Hillsdale that he gave where that came up, I think a problem we're having in our current discourse is distinguishing between satire and a psychopath. And I think that Williamson is – the comment, given his general views on abortion and the death penalty, was meant to be satirical. It was meant to make a certain point of asking people to think about what – abortion actually is and does, and also to face, I think, what the death penalty is and does. He tends to be against the death penalty in most cases. But instead, we're treating him as if he's a psychopath that shouldn't be in, not just in polite company, that probably should be locked away for people's safety. And I think if you read him for a few minutes, you would understand that he was being provocative, and that that's fairly in line with what he thinks and says normally, not necessarily what he would do if he was in charge of public policy.
Mm-hmm. Were they a little rash in letting him go that quickly after 2 weeks?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I think that they should have seen what he would write, because they knew what they were getting into, that he was going to say provocative things like that. He had said I would say that comment, which is the one a lot of people focused on, wasn't the most provocative thing that he had said. Certain things he had said about transgender persons and other things were very, very provocative. And I think that they fired him for basically being who everyone knew he was and who they should have taken into account in hiring him. So it's kind of a strange thing that they basically hired him for being the thing, or fired him for the thing they seemed to hire him for.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I know this story has gotten a little bit buried. I wonder why. There's been 44 Democrats, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who exempted Pakistani IT aides from background checks.
Yes, and lo and behold, it came back to bite them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a strange loophole where you're normally supposed to have these aides who are going to handle sensitive information. They're going to have access to sensitive information working for congressmen. They're normally supposed to have background checks, basic background checks. But there's a loophole saying you can basically say, this person was vouched for by someone else. Now, typically, the only way that can even work is that someone else has actually done the background check, but it seemed like it was a game where a circular game where nobody had done these. And what ended up happening was a couple things that it looks like these Pakistani men were accessing information they shouldn't have, collecting data they shouldn't have. It still isn't clear for what reasons. But one thing the background check would have revealed was that they had all sorts of financial problems in the past, including bankruptcies, massive debt, And that matters. This is why a lot of people fail background checks. This is why some people in the White House even were struggling to get background checks. One thing that they want to look for, if you're going to be handling sensitive information, if you're going to be working with government officials, you don't want to be able to be blackmailed, or you don't want to have something that would put pressure on you to do something unethical. And massive debts owed in the past, massive problems with credit and other things like that are pretty big red flags for temptation to unethical activity. And it's pretty extraordinary that this has been buried, because in this time where we're trying to get more transparency, this is obviously an instance where this was not only let slip through the cracks, but poured through what seems to be a gaping hole.
It certainly feels like there's corruption in there. There's something that I can't put my finger on, but I think the whole thing kind of smells.
Well, sure. And remember that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was, you know, part of the Clinton control of the Democratic Party, that sort of its last gasp was 2016. She was forced to resign right before the Democratic National Convention for doing under the table ethically corrupt things to support Clinton over Bernie Sanders before the, you know, in the midst of the primary season. So the fact that there would be widespread ignoring of the rules among Wasserman Schultz and her fellow, you know, lawmakers is sadly not a surprise. And I think it, if anything, the main reason it hasn't got as much attention beyond political bias is that she it only adds to the pile that we kind of already knew about the woman and the way she conducted business within the DNC and within Congress. But that said, I think that given how much we're trying to claiming to try to restore transparency, that as much as they are attacking the White House for failing background checks, for incompetence and other things, I think shining some light on this is only fair and should be part of the larger discussion and not ignored.
Brilliant analysis, Adam. Let me take a break. When I come back, I want to talk about the AR-15s. Apparently, there's a court in Massachusetts that said they're not protected by the Second Amendment, and some of the things that's going on with the China trade wars. We'll be back in a minute with Adam Carrington. Good morning. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. Adam, there was a Massachusetts district court judge named William Young who said that AR-15s and large capacity magazines are really most useful in the military, and they're beyond the scope of the Second Amendment, and they may be banned. What is your thoughts?
I think that one of the biggest problems, and I've pointed to this in other outlets. I wrote an op-ed about this a little bit ago, that one of the problems with how the courts have been addressing the Second Amendment is that the Supreme Court has said basically nothing for about the last 8 years, so that you're now getting these decisions in different parts of the country, Massachusetts versus California versus Utah versus Texas, that are getting more and more different from each other as to how strict versus not strict gun laws can be and how much is protected by the Second Amendment. And I think with this one, there's sort of two propositions about the Second Amendment that are being debated. As you said, the judge claimed that military-style weapons are not allowed to be protected by the Second Amendment, that it was meant to be weapons that regular people would use. At the same time, statistics showed that I believe it was around 15,000 AR-15s were sold in Massachusetts alone just a couple years ago in 2015. So you have this idea where on one hand the judge is saying these are military-style weapons, civilians don't need them, and there are claims on the other side saying, well, these are commonly used, so many people have them. And I think that this just shows another instance where this is a case that the Supreme Court has been rejecting ones like this for a while. I think it would be smart of them to take this up and start to clarify further what does, from a judicial perspective, the Second Amendment mean, and have them be a participant in this discussion that they really haven't been.
Mm-hmm. All right, Adam, I want to ask you about trade wars. And has China always played by the rules? And what is a trade war?
Yeah, that's a good question. I had a student in his best Yoda voice tell me, "Begun the trade wars have," and I thought that was fairly clever for as early in the morning as the class was. And I guess I'll start with first what a trade war is, because I don't know if we've quite hit a trade war.
Okay.
But we've certainly got some firing across the bow. A trade war is basically when one country will slap tariffs and fees and other things on the imports from another country, and that other country retaliates. And then the first country retaliates to that retaliation, and it blows up into a major battle between the countries. We've seen the beginning of that. The reason I don't know if I would quite call it a war, I'd maybe call it a trade skirmish, is that it's been fairly constrained so far. But there have been threats from both sides that this is only the beginning. And if this is only the beginning, then if it gets to a lot bigger, then I think you would have a full-on trade war. As to your second question, no, China has definitely not played by the rules, and that is part of the complaint that the Trump administration has had, that they have not opened their markets the way we have for their products. And second, intellectual property and theft, where Chinese companies will often steal basically the ideas that are supposed to be protected, or the rights and privileges of are supposed to be protected, from American companies and build their own offshoot of it, and then just run apart from any sort of credit to those who put the effort and time into making it. So, you know, I think there are, I think really it's hard, I don't think anyone with sense is saying that China isn't doing things unethically. I think really the debate is more just how to deal with it. What's the way to address that? What's the way to get them to adhere more to basic justice and fairness in their trade and their intellectual property ideas?
We keep hearing President Trump say that there's a $500 billion trade deficit with China. When we hear that,
yeah.
What does that mean?
What that means, and we shouldn't equate that with federal deficit or budget deficits. What that means is that we are taking in a lot more, that much more money worth of imports than we are exporting to China. That there's that gap between imports and exports. And what President Trump would like is to see American companies exporting more, getting into more markets in China, and I think that's part of what he's trying to push here. Now, I will say, in the 90s and into the 2000s, China has opened up some, actually a good bit more than before, but it certainly is not completely equitable at this point. I think that's what the Trump administration is trying to push. So it's not like $500 billion of our trillion-dollar deficits are with China. It's actually just the massive disparity in how much we import from China versus how much we export to China.
Mm-hmm. All right, Scott Pruitt's already got a little bit of an ethics scandal going, doesn't he?
Yes, and... it's a bit of a strange scandal. I guess the main thing I would say is that it sounds, and some other people have described it this way, as if he has taken just some ethical liberties with the perks of being the head of an agency. And on one hand, you know, there's been talk about his security detail, and I think to some degree that's defensible. He's gotten threats. You want to keep the heads of cabinet departments safe. On the other hand, there's just little things that I think add up, like you know, he argued that he flew first class for safety reasons, but then they looked back and found that he flew first class when taxpayers were paying for it. He flew coach when he was paying for it out of his own pocket. And I don't know if all of these scandals would add up enough to mean that he shouldn't be the head of the EPA. I do think it shows, you know, for an administration that says it wants to drain the swamp, it really looks swampy to have officials doing this kind of stuff. So, again, I don't know if it's fireable, but I think it is something that really just looks too much like business as usual in Washington that the administration says it's trying to change.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any hope for our country in terms of having more discussion and fewer arguments?
Oh, I guess that's quite the paused matter.
It's a rhetorical kind of question as we're departing.
Yeah, I think I sure hope so. And I think there are avenues and places where it still does happen. But I worry that too much of our discourse is based off of my side is right. Now let me figure out what the argument is rather than starting with the argument to figure out whether your side is right or not. And that's certainly something I'm trying to teach students here at Hillsdale to work the other way. But we do have a problem with how we talk to each other here. Mm. That's certainly a problem.
Adam, that's a brilliant closing gem. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you for having me. That was a great question.
Yeah, I'm going to be thinking about that one the rest of the day. Have a great week. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, great.
You bet. 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one.
There's heavy on my mind.
But thanks to Dr. Adam Carrington and Patrick Albanese for making Hour 1 so awesome. Thank you so much for that. It's Monday morning, and we are hoping that your week is starting off well. It is already April 9th, although it doesn't look that way outside. We'll be back with Hour 2 in just a minute with Chris Martin, David Aikman. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.